I don't think, though, Kim is going to want to talk to the United States. I think Kim's whole strategy at the moment is to bide his time.
Cautious Korean optimism amid continuing sanctions. It's Wednesday, February 14th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, corruption and intrigue on trial in China. Young skaters take to the ice. VOA business scene. New abilities with new limbs. A Valentine story. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un Tuesday welcomed what he called the warm climate of reconciliation and dialogue, giving a visiting North Korean delegation to the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympics in South Korea. The official Korean Central News Agency said Kim gave instructions for measures aimed at a more inter-Korean engagement. In meeting with Latvia's visiting president Tuesday, South Korean President Moon Jae-in said the United States sees inter-Korean dialogue in a positive light and has expressed its openness for talks with Pyongyang. Earlier, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence held out the prospect of talks without precondition. However, he said there would be no easing of economic and diplomatic pressure until the North takes a meaningful step toward denuclearization. Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the North views the warm reception in South Korea as a diplomatic triumph. But he said what really counts in this thaw in relations is what comes next.
It's interesting that Kim did not mention talking with the United States in those comments. And I think that's really where this needs to go next if there's going to be any sort of diplomatic breakthrough. I don't think, though, Kim is going to want to talk to the United States. I think Kim's whole strategy at the moment is to bide his time, to make sure that he has the months and the resources he needs to build that nuclear deterrent in case someday he ever wanted to attack the United States or ward off the United States if he ever felt like there was going to be invasion. That's his goal in this whole situation.
Well, Kim's sister apparently brought a personal letter to Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, from her brother, suggesting that a summit was possible. Mr. Moon responded saying the conditions have to be set right, which might include family reunions and a lessening of war-like tensions along the border. Is a summit possible?
A summit is possible, but I think we have to just take a quick look back at the past attempts and summits that have happened. There's one in 2000, but in order to make that summit happen, the South Korean government had to bribe the North with about $500 million in different shady deals and whatnot. So there's sort of a negative history when it comes to at least one summit. When they tried to do a third summit in 2009, the North Koreans demanded $10 billion in different bribes and the ability to set up some sort of weird bank. So there's been talk about summits before, and even when there's been summits that have actually happened, nothing really happened with them. There was talks and talks about talks, but the North Koreans are very good at using summits to extract concessions from the South and, in some respects, you could even say the United States. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a summit, but my question is, what would the North Koreans want to actually show up to the bargaining table?
Harry Kazianis said Pentagon officials told him joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises will resume after the Olympics, although the scale of those maneuvers could be reduced. He said that could spell the end of the current inter-Korean diplomatic thaw. Sung-Yoon Lee, an associate professor in Korean studies at Tufts University, said President Moon is on record as favoring a summit with the North, but history suggests such a meeting will not lead to denuclearization.
When Kim Dae-jung, the former South Korean president, visited North Korea in June 2000, that was perceived as a turning point, a landmark visit that would bring about genuine peace and reconciliation. Now, 18 years later, we see that North Korea has not only not denuclearized, North Korea remains the same repressive totalitarian state that it is. And it is interesting to me how people are so quick to forget North Korea's bluster barrage, a full year-long bluster barrage and threats and nuclear tests and three ICBM tests. All those painful memories have been washed aside by this PR campaign by North Korea, which is a reminder that North Korea is crafty. It really knows how to do PR and wield the carrot as well as make threats and wield the stick.
What do you make of Vice President Mike Pence's suggestion that the U.S. and North Korea could engage in dialogue without precondition, but the pressure of sanctions could only start easing once North Korea takes meaningful steps toward denuclearization.
You know, I don't see anything radical or even remotely new in Vice President Pence's recent statement. The State Department has all along maintained that a 60-day moratorium on missile and nuclear tests would be the bottom line for bilateral talks with North Korea. Now, it's been 75 days or so since North Korea's latest major provocation, the ICBM test of the Hwasong-15. That test came back in late November, November 29, 2017. So as the momentum for talks build on the stage of the Winter Olympics, I think it makes sense to float the intention to return to talks as long as North Korea is serious about denuclearization. Pence's statement is more a PR damage control effort rather than a real policy shift.
Sung-yoon Lee said August 15th marks the 70th anniversary of the creation of the two Koreas following World War II, so-called Liberation Day from Japanese colonial rule. He said that might provide the occasion for a possible inter-Korean summit. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. South Korea's Olympic diplomacy makes slow but steady progress. For Korean-American, Olympics are a chance to go home again. China charges former rising political star with bribery. Japanese speed skater suspended from Pyeongchang Olympics for doping. Stomach virus creates headache for Olympic officials. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also go online and check out the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. In China, former Politburo member and one-time rising star in politics, Shun Zhengsai, has been charged with bribery. The official news agency Xinhua said the indictment paper Tuesday was delivered to the First Intermediate People's Court in Tianjin. Shun had been former secretary of the Chongqing Municipal Committee of the Communist Party of China and a member of the Political Bureau of the 18th CPC Central Committee. He's accused of taking advantage of his posts by illegally accepting huge amounts of money and property in various posts. Joseph Cheng, a retired political science professor at the City University of Hong Kong, tells VOA the case against Shun has been building for some time.
He has been known in trouble, getting involved in bribery cases for a few months already. And in the 19th Party Congress held in November last year, he was given no important position in the Congress. So it was obvious that his stardom has been in decline. At the end of the Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao's term, they designated three persons to be successors to the top leadership. They were supposed to be elected to the Politburo in 2012, and if things were smooth, they were supposed to be elected to the Standing Committee of the Politburo in 2017. But this did not happen. In fact, one of the leading contenders, Hu Chunhua, formerly secretary of the Guangdong province, he himself avoided asking for promotion, and he still stays at the Politburo level only, meaning that he will not be likely be one of the successors to Xi Jinping. Sun Jingzhai is in a worse situation. He is now going to face court charges. He has lost his position. And then the final third person, Zhao Qiang, he is going to lose his frontline position as president of the Supreme People's Court. And he is likely to go to a second line position in the coming National People's Congress to be held next month. This has therefore increased various types of speculation that the present strongman, Xi Jinping, may like to have a third term in the next party congress to be held in 2022.
Cheng says the indictment has more to do with corruption than any sort of power struggle.
It certainly has to do with corruption, but since cynically, in the eyes of the people, it is easy to accuse almost any single official of corruption, and therefore, corruption charges are normally perceived to have to do with power struggles as well.
Joseph Cheng said it is not likely Shun will be cleared during a court trial, and his political demise is virtually assured. As for President Xi Jinping, Cheng says that he's been successful in consolidating power in his hands over the past 5 years. Now the danger is, he says, that any serious policy failure will be blamed on him. Happening now in Asia, the woman whose friendship with former South Korean President Park Geun-hye sparked a massive corruption scandal that resulted in Park's fall from power has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. Choi Soon-sil was sentenced Tuesday on charges of abuse of power, bribery, and meddling in state affairs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. With the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics underway in South Korea, here in the United States, a group of school children is hitting the slopes in Vernon, New Jersey, enjoying the expensive sport of skiing for the very first time thanks to a nonprofit foundation. VOA's Faiza El-Masri has this story narrated by Faith Lapidus.
Skiing is one of the most expensive sports. The winter activity requires special clothing and gear, but kids here don't have to worry about that. The National Winter Sports Education Foundation is providing skis, boots, helmets, warm clothes, and instructions. It makes their first time on the slopes a memorable experience.
This place is a sacred place. It's built to allow kids to master the sport, to be able to introduce them to winter activities as a way to improve their life, health, and fitness.
Sean Mallier helped set up the foundation in 2010. To expose kids to a sport he didn't have a chance to do as a kid.
But with what we are able to do, we're able to remove the barriers that could be geographic. You know, if I can't get there, I don't do it. Visibility, if I don't see it, I don't do it. Socially, if you and my friends don't do it, I don't want to do it. And then economically, if I can't afford it, you don't do it. So we put together this place to be able to deliver on the opportunities for all kids.
These kids from Avon Avenue School in the city of Newark face all those barriers, says their principal, Charity Haygood. Even though she grew up in the ski mecca of Colorado, she and her black classmates never hit the slopes.
Poor people didn't go skiing, but I knew about skiing, and we have incredible mountains in Colorado. So when I became, actually, I guess when I was in high school, a lady I babysat for gave me the opportunity in high school to go skiing, and I remember it being incredible. So then when I became a principal and I heard that my kids could have an opportunity to go skiing, I jumped on it immediately. And so this is our third year. And so our kids love it, and we'll be taking their kids skiing when they grow up. So it's pretty awesome.
The kids agree.
Skiing is like fun, but it's a learning experience, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of footwork. I have to get used to all the equipment.
Yeah. It's scary. The first time I came here, it was so scary. Because I was thinking this is going to be the first thing that we are going to try. And when they said it was going to be this one, I said, okay, it's not going to be that hard.
This winter, the National Winter Sports Education Foundation instructors are expecting to introduce around 1,600 kids to the ups and downs of skiing.
I make a promise. If you keep your hands in front, you'll never fall. If you put them behind you, you'll fall. There you go.
For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Perhaps among them right now are some future U.S. Olympic skiers. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump says he is considering tariffs, quotas, and retaliatory taxes on imports of steel and aluminum from countries such as China, Japan, and South Korea. The president says U.S. steel and aluminum industries are being decimated by the dumping of cheap imports into U.S. markets. You may import top stories and great features each day from VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, questions in Australia's banking system and new ways to give holiday money are the topics on this week's Business Scene with VOA Asia's Skylar Ogden.
A royal commission in Australia has begun investigating misconduct in the nation's banking and financial institutions. The inquiry will affect Australia's four biggest banks: Commonwealth Bank, ANZ, National Australia Bank, and Westpac. Together, these institutions make up about 80% of the country's banking market. The banks have been under increased scrutiny over the last several years over a variety of allegations. Those allegations include questionable mortgage lending practices, risky financial advice, breaches of anti-money laundering laws, and the manipulation of interest rate benchmarks. While Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull had long resisted calls for a commission, he caved in as political pressure mounted and public anger over the issues continued. Bank customers will be able to submit their complaints and grievances, but won't be compensated for individual cases. Analysts say the year-long inquiry could lead to regulatory and monitoring reforms on Australia's banking industry. Digital red envelopes are expected to go viral over this weekend's Chinese New Year festivities. Cash-filled red envelopes called hongbao are a popular traditional gift in China and are now sent online over popular social messaging services. A local Chinese resident:
as everyone joins it, it adds festive atmosphere to the holiday.
Many competing internet companies not only provide platforms to send digital cash gifts to friends and family, but the companies themselves give away cash and gift prizes. Chinese tech giant Tencent, which dominates Chinese social media with its WeChat messaging app, plans to give away 200 million yuan, which is more than $30 million, for its red envelope program this year. Its main rival, Alibaba, which owns about a third of China's dominant microblogging platform, Sina Weibo, said they put aside 500 million yuan, which is nearly $80 million. Aside from traditional competitors like tech firms and online retailers, other players like China's popular news application Jinshu Toutiao have also joined the game. The across-the-board objective is to win loyal customers. Li Yongxian is the director of the Internet Finance Lab at the National Academy of Economic Strategy.
The cost for internet companies to win customers is rather high. It may cost them 100 yuan to 300 yuan to get a good customer. In fact, the digital red envelope functions as a platform to connect the payment, social network, entertainment, and wealth management products to be developed in the future.
Experts say the digital frenzy is even more about fun and social connection than it is about money. But a little extra cash doesn't hurt either. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news alert from VOA Asia: Chloe Kim was dominant as the 17-year-old American took the gold medal in the half-pipe snowboarding event at the Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games. The daughter of Korean immigrants becomes the youngest woman to win an Olympic snowboarding gold medal. Migrate your way online to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, just like every other health technology, prosthetics are now being able to do things that were unimaginable a few years ago. The advances are happening with the help of machine learning, but also through human ingenuity. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us about both.
If this prosthetic arm looks familiar, it's supposed to. Its designers patterned it after Luke Skywalker's arm in Star Wars that can move its fingers independently. Prosthetics, which just read electrical signals, cannot tell which finger the muscle is trying to move. But ultrasound images see those tiny differences.
We developed a prosthetic arm that works based on ultrasound signals that can detect intentions of amputees for moving their fingers. So we can detect what fingers they want to move, even if they don't have the finger. It's just the phantom stamp that they're operating.
For Jason Barnes, it has been life-changing.
Completely different. It's way more intuitive. A lot of the other previous prosthetics that are on the market only allow for certain grip patterns. What this allows me to do is do whichever grip I want on the fly without having to change modes or press a button.
As the machine analyzes more and more ultrasound muscle patterns, the prosthetic will get better at predicting what the user wants to do.
Different fingers would make the muscle move differently in different directions, sometimes to the left, sometimes to the right, sometimes faster or slower. We can do machine learning, which we do, to detect all of these patterns and be able to predict what is the finger that the amputee is trying to move, which is impossible with the noisy signals from the EMG.
The researchers say fine motor control prosthetics like these have all kinds of applications, not only for amputees, but also for stroke victims and anyone with limited movement. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Today we have the first of a new series with VOA Asia's Ira Melman, and it's just in time for Valentine's Day.
Today we begin a series of stories about people talking with each other. It's called StoryCorps, which allows volunteers who have known each other for some time to sit in a studio and talk with each other. Today on Valentine's Day, we start with an episode called R.P. Salazar with Love. It is, as you might have guessed, a love story, but this one starts with a typographical error. In 2007, Rachel Salazar lived in Bangkok, Thailand. Ruben Salazar lived in Waco, Texas. Their email addresses were nearly identical.
I get to work. First thing I do is turn on my email, and I discovered this one. I didn't know who it was from.
My coworker sent you that email by mistake.
And I was like, here's another R.P. Salazar. Imagine that. And so I forwarded it. I wrote a little message. Hi, Rachel. It seems as if this message came to me instead of you. I'm in Waco, Texas, USA. Have a great day. P.S. How's the weather there in Bangkok?
I replied to you, weather in Bangkok is lovely. Gracias, Rachel.
So began a chain of emails.
The first couple of emails, you started describing yourself, and that kind of encouraged me to be open about myself, too.
I was excited that this person is halfway around the world. It's kind of like sending a letter in a bottle. I happened to hover my mouse over your name on one of those emails, and a picture of you popped up. I was like, wow, she's really beautiful. How can I make this picture bigger? I would stay up late at night, which was your morning, and we would chat for like 4 or 5 hours.
You had started to play an important role in my life even before I consciously realized it. I knew that I was falling in love, but there's still that tiny little bit of doubt that this might not work because we're 8,000 miles away from each other. But at some point, I finalized my plans to visit the U.S.
And you didn't tell anyone?
Because everyone would tell me, you're foolish to go halfway across the world to meet some strange guy you have not met. That would be crazy.
And on my end, every relative, every friend, coworker, everyone knew.
We were together for 8 days.
We were dancing one night, and you mentioned something to the fact that...
I said that you were the sweetest guy I've ever met.
I knew right at that moment, I need to say something or do something so that I don't lose her. And so I got on my knee and asked you to marry me.
Deep in my heart, I knew it was coming, and it was the right thing, and it was the best thing.
People didn't believe me when I told them I proposed to Rachel. Some of them had second thoughts for me, followed by 5 minutes of laughter.
They now all tell us, you're perfect for each other. You found the right match.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. Our thanks go to StoryCorps and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And be sure to listen for many more conversations coming in the coming weeks on VOA Asia. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us on Facebook. If you happen to be in Myanmar, check out Facebook at VOA Burmese. We're streaming there each and every day, as we do on our very own page at VOA Asia. Our thanks go out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Kelvin Fowler, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.